Welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the magazine. And today I've got a busy pod session. I have three guests with me, Grace Francis, Jamie Mancini, and Katie Collins, co-founders of new creative studio, Wonderful Things. Welcome to everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. It's good to see you all in different rooms, looking lovely. It's very good. Very good. Our theme at the magazine for August is doing things differently. So I thought we could start there and with Wonderful Things. How did it all come about? How do you guys know each other? You've all sort of worked together over the years by the sounds of it, kind of in different ways. And sort of how did this idea come around? Anyone want to jump in and give me the lowdown on that?
Yeah, I'll start. I walked into Droga and met Katie and immediately was enamored with her ability to make something out of some crazy thoughts, which is the cornerstone of Droga for much of that time, to really make the impossible happen, including all of the logistic and legal and practical and creative kind of bars and limitations around us. And I just fell in love with her work immediately. It was wonderful to connect with a kindred spirit. And when I moved through to Karmarama after Droga, I met Jamie, and similarly, we became friends within moments. Just one Universal Music Group, and someone had said to me, hey, there's this creative you need to talk to, and it was Jamie, and we have never looked back. A few years came in between that, and we've worked in a few different places, and we had this opportunity to do something different, and these were the two people I wanted to call. Fortunately, they felt the same way.
That sounds good. I was gonna ask, because like it feels like, I don't know, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but it feels like there's a little smattering of like new, you know, agencies and things starting up in at least in the UK in the last sort of few pandemic years. I wondered if it's one of those kind of reflective things where people sort of, you know, the pandemic's got people sort of reflecting on life and things, and I wonder if that's part of it, of like going, actually now's a great time, we want to change things up. Is that how it sort of worked for you guys, or you know, was this sort of a kind of decision that came about in the last few years in the pandemic, or you know, has it been brewing longer than that? Or
I can go with the start. So I basically kind of left full-time agency life nearly 2 years ago, and it was exactly that, post-COVID. I think a lot of traditional agencies that are still very successful and doing amazing stuff, but did want people to get back into a little bit more of kind of the day-to-day that had been pre-COVID. And I'd moved outside of London, you know, the classic COVID, got a dog, enjoyed walking outside and also, you know, having a 3 p.m. glass of wine on a Tuesday if I fancied it. And that didn't really lead me to going back into an office. So I think what I wanted is just a bit more control of life. And I think that's what loads of people have done, obviously, people moving to where they actually want to be versus trying to stay where the work is. And I think that's the massively exciting thing, is you can work with anyone now, because anyone is anywhere and it doesn't matter. You don't need to be in an office. And I think that's what was really exciting to me about going freelance first and kind of working on some stuff. And then when I was talking to Grace and Jamie, having the conversation of, you know, we all have a life, we want a work-life balance, but we want to create wonderful things. We want to work with really exciting clients. We want to make a difference in the stuff that we do, but we don't want it to own every part of our life. And I think that is a difference post-COVID. And I think there are some places that are more traditional that wanted to go back to, as I said, kind of the bit more 9-to-5 in an office, having everyone in the same room, which definitely has its merits. But I don't think it's the be all and end all to the success of an agency. And I think a lot of people have seen that. And then on the flip side, I think as well, clients are a bit more open to working with individuals and smaller, nimble businesses than just the traditional agencies. So it's given opportunity to quite a lot more people.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Jamie, I was going to ask, you bring lemons to the table, right? Hasn't your career and life moved into lemons? Or can you explain what's going on there?
I love how broad that is. Just lemons in general.
You just bring lemons to, you know, any situation.
Literal lemons. Yeah, so just to explain a little bit, I suppose. Lemons is actually a new drinks brand that is launched September that I founded with my wife, Holly, who's a brand strategist, a very talented one. One of my best mates, Dom, who I've known since school, who's much more the general manager and like the engine behind it, and his wife, Jen, who's like a former chef, like super tasty, who developed the product. And we developed a lemon spritz called Allura Aperitivo al Limone. So yeah, I do bring lemons and a different business to the table, but it's I think it's the same principles though, right? It's the idea of we're a small team there, a small team of wonderful things, and it's having the flexibility to kind of do what you love each day. And I think there's an intertwinedness between wonderful things and working on Allura as well. They're obviously separate businesses, but they also kind of work together really well. I'm very lucky in the fact that Grace has been behind Allura for a very long time, both supporting and actually doing some incredible work on the brand, both from like design through to some out of home stuff. We've got plans and poster designs, some really cool work. And I think when you're talking around kind of like the post COVID thing, and it's like, you know, bringing the idea of flexibility and doing what you want and all of this type of stuff, doing wonderful things is kind of like the progression of that. The fact that I can do on one day Allura and on another day do wonderful things is a really great place to be.
Is it kind of a fun thing because you're now sort of like brand and agency in some ways?
I was saying to someone the other day, is this a weird way of kind of like semi going in house? Does it count? I don't know. Yeah, it is kind of a brand and agency side, but I think the interesting bit, and I kind of was having this conversation with Katie and Grace the other day, actually. It's like I look at my working week and what's essentially my life now, and it's a really good place to be, right? In like both camps, I'm working with great mates, doing things that I love and on kind of our own terms. It's a brilliant place to be. So the idea of it being both brand and client is like true, but it's also just making really great stuff day in, day out, which is interesting. It kind of takes away that dynamic away a little bit.
I was going to say on our theme, Grace, I was looking on your LinkedIn, and I think there's something near the top where you say about in your summary, sort of putting more meaningful work into the world and not adding to the noise, which resonated with quite a few things we've had on the magazine in the last few years. Does that sort of form the backbone of wonderful things, you know, sort of not adding to the noise, putting more meaningful work out there? I'm guessing it does, but yeah.
It's so strange you picked up on that. That's been there for a little while. And I think it was sitting there unconsciously as we move forward with wonderful things. I think some of it is the freedom of being an indie shop is saying no to the criminal client that nobody wants to take. And that's really important. But it's also saying yes to work that can exist for longer than a heartbeat. Work that gets your attention but doesn't frustrate you, actually fulfills you and nourishes you. And that feels so significant in what we do. We have the choice of how we spend our time. Maybe if we'd been born in different times, we'd have pursued art instead of advertising. Maybe I'd have just been a nerd with my books, who knows. But having built this career, it feels so satisfying to now choose consciously to put things in the world that have value and make you feel that value with the brand as well. I think most products are evolved as far as they're going to be evolved. Every smartphone works perfectly. Every dishwasher works perfectly. Your noise cancelling headphones will stop you getting knocked off a bike when they cut through and let you know someone's behind you. So the relationship with brands has to change accordingly, which means they need to show up in the world in more meaningful ways. And putting wonderful things into the world was a great way to do that.
Yeah, the show up to the world's interesting, because I was going to say, what do you all sort of define as more meaningful work these days, you know, in 2024? Has that sort of changed in the last few years, or has it always remained the same?
I think meaningful work has probably always been the same thing, but maybe we've lost touch of it a little bit. I think, from my perspective, meaningful work is something that truly resonates with the people you're trying to speak to, right? And that could be, as Grace mentioned, like from an artistic standpoint, the audience you're trying to reach, or the customer you're trying to reach from a brand point of view. And I think for me, it's about creating that real kind of cultural societal resonance with those target audiences. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it being the most famous campaign in the world or the most awarded campaign in the world. It could really resonate with that select small group of people you're trying to speak to. For me, that is like truly meaningful work. And it can still get all the accolades and all of that. They're not separate things. But like meaningful work for me is really resonating with who you're actually talking to.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like you know, a lot of stuff is sort of targeting subcultures or more focused on smaller communities, which feels like that's, I don't know, that feels like it's gained traction in the last few years, like much more community-based stuff.
I mean, can I expand on that a little bit with an example if that would help?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So like last year, a couple of years ago, when we were at Wong Judy, we worked on a campaign for a trans mass clothing brand called Bothant. And it was to launch a new kind of jean line. And we did some incredible photos inspired by like the 90s CK adverts that was about empowering masculinity, like sexiness and masculinity. And we were doing the same thing for trans men. And, you know, that was not a big budget campaign at all. But we did an amazing out-of-home shot that put these trans men in the center, at the forefront of this campaign. And we had huge success with it because the community got behind it and the community shared it on social. And that's how it kind of galvanized and got further reach. And I think for me, that is like, you know, that's not going to get plastered everywhere as like some hugely famous campaign. But from my perspective, I think our perspective is like, that's meaningful work, right? We put something out in the world, the community got behind and shouted about, and then literally pushed forward. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm going to add something that's much less insightful than Jamie, but just for me, like the other flip side of it is something that means something to me. And so, you know, we've all worked on incredible things. I think there are some things that I look back at my career and not going to name them, but I think, yeah, that was pretty cool. It was a big budget. You know, lots of people saw it. It was great. There are other small budget things that really meant something to me because it touched something that was close to heart. And actually, somewhat similar, when I was living in the US, we worked with Sleek and we essentially did a trans competition for artistry. And then that makeup artist became one of the Sleek official makeup artists that then went round, and actually they got loads of jobs off it. They built a crew. And it meant something to someone, and it actually delivered future career opportunities to them, and it gave them a platform. And that was kind of, I look back at that as one of the most exciting things I did in the US. And actually even going down to just looking at, you know, when, you know, we are in the wonderful position that we can look at what clients we want to approach, as well as some of the amazing clients we've worked with in the past that we'd love to work with again. And looking at those and thinking, well, what brands do I use? What brands? And I was thinking about it in the shower this morning of just, I have this instant coffee. I'm not a massive coffee connoisseur. I drink instant coffee, and I'm a basic girl and I love a flavored instant coffee even. But there is this brand that I and my husband buy religiously. And I was thinking, God, I'd love to do something with them because actually I start my day with them every day. And so I think making it meaningful for communities, cultures, but also for ourselves that we're really proud and we really enjoy every day of what we do is really important to me as well.
Yeah, that makes me think of the writer thing of write what you know a little bit, you know, where it's like, oh, actually, I've got like a connection to this brand or this experience or whatever. So, yeah, I'm quite plugged in to be able to like do something with it or improve it or something.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, mine would be working with dogs, and basically we only work with dog charities, but I don't think that's going to be successful long term.
You never know. This is probably could blow that whole market wide open, perhaps. I don't know. There's got to be a huge growth in the dog market, maybe. One of the things I was going to ask was about our July theme the other month was fame and attention. And I think in your sort of press release around your launch, you were talking about capturing attention and emotion to create wonderful things that stay with you. So I was sort of picking up on that a little bit of like the longevity of what you're putting out into the world. I mean, is that a pretty hard challenge for any marketer these days because of everything moving so fast? You know, how do you sort of try and go about achieving longevity?
So I think I just had this conversation at breakfast with a brilliant strategist actually, where he was raging heavily about a certain agency saying that Christmas ad was the most successful ad ever, and it was November when they said it. And actually, we don't know how successful it will be because one, Christmas hasn't occurred, and two, it takes serious longevity to prove effectiveness. But how interesting to look back and recognize what has touched us. When I was a kid growing up on a council estate, not knowing that advertising exists, I remember looking through a beautiful coffee table book in our library, and one of the pieces was the Evian Lido. They had saved a Lido from closing, and Evian was in the bottom, beautiful tiles, and supposedly it was over, Heathrow flight path went over it. Whether that was true or not, we don't know. I don't think it almost doesn't matter. But I thought, oh my God, this is interesting. What the hell is this? I want to do, what is this? I want to do this, to the point where all I knew was the agency's name. I didn't understand anything about it. It's like 16, 17. And I thought, right, this is what I want to do. I want to persuade people through being clever and being smart. For me, that's comms experience, right? It transcends an ad that we don't think about. And you know, Chris Chapman just wrote a piece, you know, very good ex-colleague of ours and friend of ours, just wrote a piece in Campaign talking about the power of double screening and looking at something on a phone and hearing something in the background on TV. And that's true. You know, that's going to help you decide which brand to buy occasionally. But I really, really want to make stuff that makes the 17-year-old say, I can do that too. Stuff that makes you feel something. I drink Evian to this day. I think it's very nice. It tastes great. But I drink it because of that connection. I still go into a shop and buy it because of that. I care what they did. Someone will drink it because they cared that they saved a Lido. I drink it because they did a cool thing.
That makes sense. Yeah, the things that kind of stick with you, resonate years later. I swear that's why there's so much stuff coming back from the 90s, because it's all the millennials now in positions of relative power where they're like, we can create things from the 90s now, hooray. this is our era.
Yeah, it's nostalgia as well, right? It's Jamie and I once tried to pitch a 8-bit Beastie Boys or the Grams. It was for a record label, to be fair.
That was a great idea. I stand by that.
It was a great idea. But also it was both of us being tired and going, this is what we want. Here's the thing that's going to put you exactly where you need to be on the map. You could have that. But also, by the way, can we meet the Beastie Boys? And there's, you know, sometimes, you know, those ideas really resonate. Nostalgia is so powerful. And you've got to put them in. If you're not putting them in, they're not getting made.
And the wonderful thing about it is you can keep pitching them because nostalgia comes back and back. Absolutely, so someone will eventually buy it.
Did you all see that thing of, was it Cypress Hill and The Simpsons actually did their scene from The Simpsons where they meet Cypress, and they did it in, for real, but like years and years later. I only saw that the other day. It was amazing.
So good.
I was like, why not? Yeah, of course, you know, opera and Cypress Hill going together, you know, Beastie Boys and opera. Maybe there's the link, I don't know, something. Just keep adding hip hop to opera.
The Lollapalooza episode of The Simpsons, one of the finest 30 minutes of TV ever.
We've all perfectly aged ourselves in the last minute.
God, yeah, well, I don't know. I'm older millennial, whatever I am. I don't know, I suppose. Another thing I wanted to ask about was I saw a post about a week ago from Zoe Scammon where she was referencing a piece from Kevin Kelly talking about type 2 growth, not adding more to the pile, and sort of about evolution and betterment and growth as from moving from growth as volume to growth as value. I'm guessing we sort of already touched on that a little bit, but do those sort of things speak to you all, would you say, in terms of work that you want to put out? I mean, obviously, you're not the brands themselves, but maybe you can influence them to do that a bit.
Yeah, and I think also when Zoe listens to this, she'll understand why I've been stalking her all week on LinkedIn to read those posts and get the context of what you're talking about when these questions came through. Always good to know why. Yeah, I think it's very much that. But also, I think it's extending to understand about hyper-localized communities as well. We're creating more things than ever before. Signal versus noise is really important. But also, there are channels where we can be really, really good about connecting authentically. My TikTok feed speaks to exactly who I am and what I care about. And in some ways, that can be a bubble. We have to be aware of that if we're thinking about things like politics. But also, it's incredibly comforting to see people like me in other sides of the world. I use Reddit. I've got a weird genetic typo. 1 in 10,000 people have it. I use Reddit to find other people saying, hey, try this, do this. This is what works. How fantastic that we can filter down that as well. So that curation, that filtering, that use of algorithms means that when we create, we can act like D2Cs. You know, we can find that authentic audience for brands, and we can connect with them in a way that's really, really significant, and not worry if it's not right for everyone. We don't have to please everyone. We can, in fact, go and find those audiences and give them what they fully deserve, a thing that they love without worrying to ostracize other people. If it doesn't resonate with someone else, they scroll on. But that for me is actually the really interesting thing that all of us get to create and all of us get to make, but we do it for our audiences in such a meaningful way that we don't have to worry about the lowest common denominator, the largest group. We can talk directly to one group and then directly to a completely different group about different features, different product sets, and let them shine.
I think it's something that because I think there are brands as well that do it really well already. Both Grace and Jamie know that I harp on about Patagonia a lot. Because look at what an incredible brand offers lifelong value to their customers, not just in their product, but in traveling around, repairing their product, in offering opportunities for people to experience the world. Like the work they do in the US, it's just phenomenal how they give value to their customers. And that in turn has led to volume because of the fact of, you're receiving such an incredible product, you're receiving such incredible care. Why would you not spend the money to engage and become part of that community? And I look at them all the time. They're a dream to work with for me. But I think, there's learnings that you can take from them and how we can do that with other brands and, with ourselves as well as what we're offering to clients.
And that makes sense. I think someone put an article on the magazine up yesterday, and they were referencing Patagonia. I think it was about 2 years ago. Didn't they do a shareholder statement that said something like their main shareholder is Mother Earth or something like that? I think that was the big takeaway from it, which was interesting. It was sort of saying, this is the main thing we're focused on as ever. But it was nice to reiterate.
Yeah, and a lot of their products, they literally, like, when they are done, they go back into the earth because they're all recyclable, or they're used kind of as products for farming and stuff like that. I actually, sorry to reference another podcast, but his Diary of a CEO is absolutely breathtaking of just kind of where they came from, what they do, and the values of that company.
I know we've only got like I don't know, a few minutes or so, so I just got a few more little questions for you. I wanted to ask a sort of taking a barometer of the industry. I mentioned COVID and obviously, things going on in the last few years, but it seems like a lot of creative industries are sort of struggling right now. What's the sort of take that you all have on things? I guess we're four years into a pandemic, and how does the industry feel to you right now?
I'll talk from a kind of experience point of view of, I think it's peaks and troughs. There are weird moments, like the beginning of this year, I think for a lot of people was really slow. And it's I think quite a few brands waiting out uncertainty before they go and commit budgets and engage people. I think there's also probably them speaking to more people to try and make sure that what they're choosing is the right direction to go in. So there's definite kind of overhang or hangover, sorry, of uncertainty, both on kind of brand side and then the agency side. But I think there are loads of really exciting opportunities, and I think that there's been a lot of recovery since, and still the existence of online worlds and the ability to engage people, not just in kind of a very siloed experience or location, but actually the bonus that COVID has shown how you can engage people further afield is pushing people forward as well. So it's definitely, been tough at times, but I think there's lots of opportunity out there. I think it's getting a lot better. A lot more people are freelance, and so they can engage the right teams for the right things, which is helping kind of get everything moving again.
Yeah, I guess in the UK we had an election as well, which was a nice excuse for every business to kind of go, we're just going to wait and see what happens. It's like, oh, okay, right. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. But every time I read about certain industries, it's like every single one that's slightly creative in any way seems to be struggling yet booming at the same time. It's a strange thing. Like I saw in your press release, you mentioned you were launching with a game studio. I assume that's gaming, some kind of online type gaming.
And that client's at GamesCon right now, and the juxtaposition between being in that space and getting to have those accolades, win those awards, make those connections, and at the same time recognizing that industry, much like ours, is going through seismic change. And I think one of the scariest things is looking at organizations in extreme power who are turning labor into capital, right? Who are making more money than ever before, but are then still making redundancies. And in this point of late stage capitalism, that doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of individual employees. And how we respond to that, I think, is a judgment on who we are as individuals, as well as who we are as members of our industries. I think it's really, really important to make space for people to be able to do their jobs well, even if there is a faster or cheaper way of doing it. And I think this is the cusp we sit on when we look at holding groups. Where can they continue to have that eternal profit? We saw it in Silicon Valley first. We saw it in tech. We must make room to make good work, to enjoy work. We've all seen that conversation around AI and automation, and I want my AI to do the dishes so I can make art. I don't want it to make art, so I have to do the dishes. And that's really true for a lot of us choosing to be in these creative industries. It's essential that commercial creativity gets to exist.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I mean, as a gamer myself, I'm kind of, I've written a few pieces for the magazine about sort of marketing or brands getting more into gaming. And I'm sort of curious to see where that industry goes in the next few years. Because I'll read one piece that says it's better than ever before, and then another that says it's worse than ever before, at least for the, creatives, developers, people working on games and things. So it's a strange old area, but it's not really alone though, is it? It's like it's happening across the board in a lot of sort of creative areas and entertainment, TV and et cetera.
But I think we're seeing a real similarity in that lots of indie game groups are three people in their bedroom or a basement, or even an office if they've got the right funding, making something themselves because there wasn't space for them to exist in a large group. And yet at the same time, Larian just put out Baldur's Gate 3, possibly the best game to ever have existed, and one of the most deeply fulfilling experience. And for everyone else sort of on this chat, there are people who've put 1,000 hours into this game. You think about putting 3 hours into a film, or 20 hours into a TV series, and rinsing that over the weekend. These people play this game for hours and then play it again. I'm one of those people. So
how many hours are you up to, Grace?
I've done 4 run-throughs, and
I'm still in
3 digits. I haven't pushed to 4. So
okay, yeah, I'm on my 3rd one, and I'm maybe 600 hours or something crazy.
But a world that's so immersive that people want to finish it and then start it again immediately, versus I played an indie game the other day. It took 15 minutes and I cried at the end, and I woke my partner up and said, play this now. I'm a great person to live with.
It depends if you're waking them up at like 2 a.m. or something, then fair
enough. Yeah, it was a reasonable hour. But also it's necessity, right? The conditions mean that if you're not going to get to work in that large group, you're going to go and do something else. Now, we're quite advanced in our careers. We've all held leadership titles. Katie has run a company before. So we're in a really advanced place, but I wouldn't be surprised to see 3 people who've never had a head of title starting their own offering. Because why not? Absolutely, why not? The amount of turnover that needs to survive wouldn't be that much. That's, they could have 2 nice clients and get on with their lives. And so if there aren't the conditions for them to be promoted in a major group, or to be felt or heard, why not jump into the abyss? Because permanent roles don't look that certain right now. So completely understand what you're doing.
The opportunity for side hustle now as well, of people like, there's so many conversations about the young generation not having a work ethic, et cetera. But I think they're phenomenal because I think, people are finding anything and everything, whether it's starting their own Vinted channel to be able to kind of work through clothing and make side money out of that that can actually pay bills, so then they can focus their passion on not needing to make their livelihood. I think it's absolutely amazing, and that's the really wonderful thing, is I think people are looking a lot more creatively at how they're spending their days, exactly how Jamie was saying at the beginning of, how do I do the things that I enjoy with the people I want to do it with, versus going into, a machine where they may not get the opportunities that they're looking for.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Sort of quite a positive note on which to wrap things up. I have a final question though. Are there any sort of, you've all sort of touched on them a little bit, but are there any sort of areas that you'd love to get into, I don't know, industries or types of things that you'd like to pursue with Wonderful Things? Or do you want to keep that all under wraps as a secret for now?
I have no qualms about keeping secrets.
Fair enough. Other than lemons.
Other than flogging citrus fruits in liquid form, I would love it if we made a short film.
About lemons or just a film in general?
That's just an ad. I would love to actually make a short film. We've actually been knocking around an idea for a little while now that I'd love to see come to fruition. That would be it for me. I'm a big cinema fan. So
okay, interesting.
What about you two?
Mine evolves with essentially, it's very much sport based. I love being outdoors and sport. And you know, I've just watched the latest Tour de France Netflix documentary. So I'm desperate to work with the Tour de France. I'm also, I've been really lucky to work with F1 this year, and actually a few times over the past number of years around the world. And so that's something that I love. And I think it's huge industry, but it's really interesting as to how we could actually look at that and do things differently. I think that, you know, there's kind of a set way to work in F1 or in certain sports worlds, but looking at doing that in a slightly more meaningful way or in a longevity way would be really cool.
That sounds good. Or something dog related, I assume, as well.
I mean, yeah, dogs or, I mean, when they say don't work with children or animals, I don't want to work with children. I do want to work with animals.
Makes sense. And then I'm guessing Grace, probably something to do with Larian or Baldur's Gate or something in that realm.
I mean, interesting storytelling from gaming is great. I think it's really interesting. Over the last couple of years, I've done a lot around making people think, making people cry. Jamie and I made the Museum of Memories for women with dementia to store those memories with our family members. We made the Iran Prison Project, which originally was called The Worst Place on Earth, an interactive experience that fortunately we didn't use that name because now there are even worse places on earth, which is shocking to say, isn't it? I also might like this year to make people laugh as well as making them cry and think. So I don't know what shape that's in, but that's something I have in the back of my mind as well, to stop getting phone calls and people saying, you made me sob. I'm going to try and make some people laugh this year too.
I don't know, laughter and crying are sort of two sides of the same coin, aren't they? Sort of, yeah, it's a fine line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do both at the same time. But sounds like a great place on which to end. So yeah, I just want to say thank you to all of you for coming on the Media Cat Magazine podcast.
For having us.
Nice one. Thank you very much.